TalkBack's your opportunity to communicate with us. Maybe you've got an observation you'd like to share. Maybe you've got a question you'd like to pose. I'm not sure, but either way or any way, we'd like to hear from you. You can call our TalkBack number. That number is 218-999-8876. 999-8876. I still didn't get enough nines. 3949-8876. Or you can send it by email, which might work better, except don't send it to my computer because it's on strike right now. JLatimer@kaxe.org or comments@kaxe.org. You can always write us a letter. Nothing feels better than writing a nice letter and sending it in the mail. And nothing feels better to receive than getting a nice letter. So send us your letters, your emails, your comments, whatever. We just want to hear from you. And if you're a teacher and you'd like to expand phenology into your classroom, send me a personal email to that address, jlatimer@kaxe.org. And I will see to it that you are included in any programs that I will start this fall for working with students. We do have one email vocal recording this morning. Came from our good friends, the Newstalks. That would be Ruth and Axel and Pearl. And here is their report.
Hi, this is Ruth.
Axel.
And Pearl Newstalk. Today we have some special guests joining us.
We are Greta,
Nora,
and Eva.
Hi, my name is Eva. I'm 7.5 years old. Last week we went to Lake Superior, and the water was low.
Hi, I'm Pearl. I'm 8. Finally, we're allowed to have a campfire because it rained. On our hike at Scenic State Park, we saw rainbow flowers, but we couldn't find any blue. Red baneberry, orange rose hips, yellow tall dandelions, green basilwood buds, purple on some kind of mint, pink tiny flowers.
Hi, I'm Nora. I'm 9. This summer, I noticed that there were very few mosquitoes. I think it's because it's been so dry. During the downpour today, I saw that the ground had been so dry that it wasn't soaking up the water, so there were lots of puddles.
This is Axel. I'm 10. Sadly, most of our monarchs' caterpillars are being killed by stink bugs. The deer flies seem to have gone, but there are lots of small black flies.
Hi, I'm Greta, and I'm 11. I went to camp and noticed the trees had dried up branches, and it was unbearably hot in Duluth. At the Newstalk cabin this year, there are not many mosquitoes, but a lot of black flies.
Hi, this is Ruth. I'm 15 years old. It is still hotter than here about half the days than it is in Memphis. It's also been very hazy because of the fires north of us. We've seen lots of flowers, including tansy, black-eyed Susan, sweet clover, and yarrow. There are also lots of raspberries behind our cabin.
Bye!
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 Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye, kids. Thanks for your report. Lots of good things there. Lots of things happening out there. I hope that you are getting out and enjoying them as well. And if you have young children who might enjoy doing the same thing on the air, we'd love to hear from you. You know how to get in touch with us.
Little unusual, we've got a live talk back this morning.
A live talk back.
Mm-hmm. He must speak with you. It is Bill Rutherford calling in. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. I'm semi-awake, so that's good. being semi-retired, I tend to sleep in a little bit more than I used to, but no, I'm usually up by about 6 o'clock.
Well, I hope I didn't push you out of bed this morning. No.
Yeah. I was just getting ready to make coffee.
Excellent. Well, I hope the coffee's made, and I am ready to stand and take the tongue lashing that I so richly deserve. Some may recall that a couple of weeks ago I mentioned on air about I don't know how the conversation began even now, but we were talking about blood, and Scott Hall was with me.
I was going to say, this sounds like a Scott conversation.
Yep, Scott had no idea what his blood type was, and I was astonished that you could get to be 70 years old and not know your blood type. It strikes me that that's an incredibly safe life.
Like, that's true.
He's never been in the emergency room with the doctor scrambling around trying to figure out what blood type he is. But I said to my eternal chagrin that I was the universal blood donor because I was O positive. And you came up to me the other day in conversation and said, no, that's not correct. Maybe you could fill us in a little bit about blood type. It's a confusing thing.
Well, as I told you that night that we talked, I was not trying to be nitpicky. However, I just wanted to be correct. And actually, the universal donor is O negative, which I am. And I think I mentioned to you that when I was in college, a bunch of us used to donate blood, and I always got $10, where the other guys got $5 because I was the universal donor.
Perfect.
Which we used to buy certain beverages at that time.
Well, a guy's got to keep his hydration up if he's giving blood.
That's right. Well, anyway, the situation is this. There are four different blood types. There's type O, which you and I are. There's type A, type B, and then type AB. And the difference is that O does not have any A or B or AB, so it can safely be given to those other three blood types as long as it's O negative. The negative and positive refers to the Rh factor, which is another antigen in the blood. And Rh negative just means that you do not have that antigen, the Rh antigen. And so if you're Rh positive, you can receive Rh negative blood because there will be no reaction at all. But if you are Rh negative and you receive Rh positive blood, then the body will recognize that Rh positive as being foreign and will start to produce antibodies or immunity to it, which then causes a reaction.
Wow. Okay.
So the O can go to any of the other three types, but not vice versa. And the negative can go to Rh positive, but not vice versa.
All right. Well, Bill, you've elucidated me and many others, I'm sure, this morning. And I hope Scott Hall is listening, and I hope he finds out what his blood type is.
Well, of course, an easy way to find out is to go donate blood.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, because of course you always get tight, plus you get a few other things checked to make sure you don't have any dreaded diseases.
Yeah, that's true. I donate blood with some regularity. I think I've given up over 4 gallons now. Not at one time, but
no, that would be good.
What?
But obviously, if you've given up that much, you're pretty a healthy producer of new blood. So that's good.
Yeah. What is the approximate volume of blood for someone of, say, your and my size?
It's roughly 6 liters.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, when they take a pint, that's about half a liter, which, you know, would be about roughly 1/12 or about 8% of your body's blood.
You know,
I believe that's correct.
Yeah. And in all the years I've given blood, I've had absolutely no bad reactions. I do it because they give me Lorna Doone cookies at the end, and I never get those at home. So
yes, I heard you say that. That is an added bonus.
Yes, it is.
One thing they always do is they have you drink plenty of fluid while you're giving the blood, too.
So right, yep.
You keep up that hydration.
Yeah. Bill, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
I look forward.
I have one little note
to
give you. That's that I have a never-ending war on Tansy here.
Uh-huh.
And So I have been up and down my driveway, which is roughly a half a mile long, cutting off the flowers. I do that every year, and it seems like I have less and less as long as I take those flowered heads off and get rid of them. And I'm just wondering if you think that that's effective. I really don't like the idea of spraying. So it seems that I have less and less tansy every year when I do that.
Yeah, well, I would think that would work. I tend to just try and rip them out of the ground, but that isn't effective as it could be either. And so I think it's a simple process. Just snip the heads off and put them in your pocket. And when you get home, put them in the trash or something like that. Get rid of them.
Yeah, I end up with a 5-gallon bucket that I end up filling up. But it's labor intensive, but it's a labor of hate.
Yeah. All right, Bill. Thanks for joining us.
Yep.
Talk to you soon. Bye. It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And I think I mentioned last week that we are coming into the season of tall. And as I look out the windows of our studio, I see very short ears, very short legs, very small bunny. Little baby bunny is out there. But he's dwarfed by the Monarda, the flowers beyond it that are really an interesting and beautiful flower and wonderful for butterflies and hummingbirds. They love Monarda. Bergamot is perhaps the other name that you might know Monarda by. Monarda fistulosa. It is quite the enterprising plant, and once it's established, it does pretty well in an area. Witness our rain garden. I've been hiking in the woods a bit more, perhaps, than in the past, and it's been delightful. I have been observing a lot of flowers that are about to bloom, and some that are blooming now. Among those that are about to bloom, bull thistle in my yard. The bull thistle is that really aggressive thistle that has thorns all over it, leaves, stems, everywhere. The outside of its flowers even has a lot of thistle prickers on it. And the flower of the bull thistle is redder than the flower of the Canada thistle. And those are the two primary thistles that we have in northern Minnesota. The Canada thistle is more of a bluish purple, and the bull thistle is more of a red purple. And both are quite stunning, and both are very attractive to butterflies and to bees. The thistle seeds are sought out by the goldfinches, who like to line their nests with them. And the goldfinches are not yet quite ready to nest. It could be starting about now. So the goldfinches are kind of late in getting their family started. But the other birds are right on schedule. We have a feeder full of young rose-breasted grosbeaks, young purple finches, young blue jays, young chickadees, young white-breasted and red-breasted nuthatches. And we think, my wife and I think, that some of the birds coming to our hummingbird feeder are this year's young ruby-throated hummingbirds. So we will keep you apprised of that as we go along. Among the flowers that are out in the woods right now that are blooming, a second species of goldenrod. So the early goldenrod, Solidago juncaea, has been in flower for over a week now. It was in flower last time we talked. This week, the what I think is Canada goldenrod. This is really, goldenrods are really taxing, and they're quite difficult to get a good handle on whom belongs to which family of Canada goldenrod or of goldenrods. But I think that what I'm seeing is Canada goldenrod. If you are an expert in goldenrod and would like to educate me, I would pay for the opportunity. So get in touch with me if you'd like to teach me about goldenrod. Among the other plants out there that I've been checking out, woolgrass, which is a scirpus, and it grows in ditches, usually in or near water. It's 5 feet tall. It's got a kind of a brownish-looking pendulous head on it, and that head is becoming much more brown as the season goes along, and you will be able to pick out woolgrass pretty easily. It is one of the dominant plants of the ditches, so as you're driving along, you should be able to find some woolgrass without too much of an effort. Black bindweed has been blooming for a month now, and your hedge bindweed is the one that puts out that big white trumpet-shaped flower that whenever you see it, you're going to think morning glory. But if you look at the leaf, you'll see that in this case, the leaf shape is more like a spearhead or an arrowhead as opposed to the heart shape of the true morning glory. So the hedge bindweed has this halberd-shaped head on it, a leaf on it, and it has that big trumpet-shaped bell flower. But we're talking about black bindweed, and black bindweed has these little tiny white dots of flowers on a kind of a reddish stem, which makes them stand out, and they climb, just like the hedge bindweed, they climb up surrounding foliage to gain support and to get to light. The interesting thing about black bindweed is that already its leaves are turning red. So if you get out in the forest and start looking around, you will find these red leaves that are scattered over the ground, and they are black bindweed. So check those out. And they're probably, I would have to guess that they're about the first plant to turn color in the fall, and following them, of course, when they're done, or not done, but as they go along, the next plant that's going to turn red is probably spreading dogbane, and the spreading dogbane will have yellow leaves on it. Now, spreading dogbane right now is covered in white and pink flowers, and it is got these some almost 4-inch long pea pod like seed structures on them. So spreading dogbane is really on its way to getting its job done for the summer. And if you have some in your yard, check it out, because there's always a ton of butterflies hanging out around the spreading dogbane. Joe pieweed and its close cousin boneset are both right now they are almost open. So you've got these little balls. In the case of boneset, the balls are white, and there are tons of them. And in the same, there are hundreds of them in a cluster. And in the same type of flower structure, the Joe pieweed has pink flower structures that are not yet open. And again, there are, let's say, dozens. Hundreds probably overstates it, but there are dozens. There might be 30 or 40 of these in a clump. If you're looking at boneset, the way you're going to see this clump of little white dots that will be the flowers as soon as they open. These are the flower buds. But if you look below that, look at the leaves. And the leaves appear to join at the base, so you have opposite leaves left and right, and and the base of the leaves appears to have fused together. And this trick of boneset, or this habit of boneset of having its leaves grow together like that, gave rise to the thought in pre-science, in pre-medicine times, that this plant would have the ability to knit bones back together because it knit its leaves together. So if you'd had a broken leg in the 1600s or the 1700s, they might have taken boneset plants and wrapped them around your leg. It would have been painful, and if you held really still, maybe the bone would set on its own. The boneset plant itself was going to have very little to do with it. I saw my first sunflower blooming yesterday, and I'm not sure if it was tall sunflower or Maximilian sunflower. I've got to go back and look at the bracts on the back of the flower in order to get a better definition of it, but I know that it's either tall or Maximilian sunflower. The flat-topped asters are blooming. Now, the flat-topped asters are fairly large white flowers, probably an inch across, and they have a bright yellow center. They get their name because they all sort of grow, they all bloom sort of at the same level. And I've put a picture on Season Watch this morning that shows this flowering structure. And if you look at the flower buds, you'll see that they're all sort of at the same level. And that gives this flat-topped aster its name, these flat arrangements of flowers, no flowers kind of down below. They're all sort of at the top, and they all are kind of evenly distributed across a single plane. That's flat-topped aster. Large-leafed aster, my good friend Dallas Hudson says that large-leafed aster has begun to bloom in Akeley. So perhaps out to the west in the Brainerd and Bemidji areas, you may already have large-leafed aster blooming. Back here in my area, I have not seen it in bloom yet, though that only means that I haven't seen it. It could be blooming. It's very close. I have flower buds, but no flowers. Now, the large-leafed aster, when it flowers, the rays of the flower, this is one of those sunflower-like flowers, aster-like flowers. It's got the flower is actually in the center, and then there are rays that arrange themselves around the center to attract insects to the flower. In the case of the large-leafed aster, the rays are incomplete. So if you think of a daisy and you think of the nice even distribution of rays around the edge of a daisy, if you went in there and plucked out a few of those at odd or random spots, you'd have a ray, a space. Array, a space, array, a space. At any rate, you get the idea. There are these incomplete, when you're looking at flat-topped asters, the rays never seem to make that nice complete disc. There are always some gaps, and the flower is going to be blue. That is large-leafed aster. I saw my first jewel weed in bloom this past week, and that is pretty early. Normally, the jewel weed doesn't bloom until later on in July, more toward the very end of the month and going into August. And that jewel weed flower is that orange trumpet-shaped flower that the hummingbirds like so well. As they approach the flower and insert their proboscis in the flower to get the nectar, which is way around in the back in a kind of a fishhook-like structure, in order to get all the way around there, they have to put their head quite a ways into the flower. And when they do, the flower leans down, and if it's in the male stage, it puts a little drop of pollen on the forehead of the hummingbird. When she flies to the next flower, if that flower is past its male stage and has become female, then that pollen will transfer and you'll end up with the little green seed pod, which gives the plant its other name. Besides jewelweed, it's called spotted touch-me-not. And if you touch the bottom of these seed pods on the spotted touch-me-not, they explode and the seeds go flying everywhere. So check those out. Burdock is right on the edge of flowering. Burdock has those great big leaves. If you're walking through the woods, you're going to look at burdock and you're going to think, oh, look, rhubarb. But the stems are green and it's a biennial. So that cluster of large leaves that's on the ground is the first year. The second year, up comes a tall shoot with branches coming out and these burrs that will end up getting stuck in your hair or your dog's hair and be quite difficult to pull out. The flower itself, when it blooms, is a bit like a thistle. It's a lot of little colored, purple-colored, fringy, hairy kind of things that stick out of there. So watch for the burdock to be flowering very soon. Creeping bellflower and marsh bellflower are both blooming. The creeping bellflower is about 3 feet tall. Big blue flowers seem to organize themselves so that they're all on one side of the stem. And the marsh bellflowers are these little white flowers, bell-shaped flowers, that are kind of laying in the sedges around the edges of lakes. And they really have the structure, their growth structure is so weak that if were it not for the grasses that they cling to and lay on, they would not be visible at all. Couple of final notes. One, I saw a very large black bear cross Highway 49, County Road 49, in front of me the other morning. And that bear was going somewhere because he was on the road for about 3 seconds and then he was gone. He just sprinted across the road full speed, but it's always fun to see the bears. The other disappearing thing in my notes were the morning cloak butterflies. You may recall 2 weeks ago we were talking about morning cloaks being everywhere. This was the second generation. They emerge in the spring, usually in early May or late April. On a nice warm day, you'll see these black butterflies come out. They're very large. They're the size of a monarch. 2 weeks ago, they were everywhere. I haven't seen one in the last week. Not since we talked last week have I seen a morning cloak butterfly. They disappear. They go somewhere and they hide out. And they will emerge in September and search out a place to spend the winter. And I'm not sure if they'll be doing that if they do that by stocking up on food to have some fat reserves, or if they just are resting now and ready to go someplace later on. Finally, a couple of things that you're going to see if you're walking through the woods are bright blue berries called blue bead lily and red baneberry. And both of these, the red baneberry is a bright red cluster of berries. The blue bead lily is a cluster of bright blue berries. What you're going to notice about both of them is that nothing is eating them. And there's a good reason for that. You don't want to eat them either. They contain a chemical called calcium oxalate. It's a long needle-like molecule that gets embedded in your flesh and will cause some significant burning in your mouth, tongue, lips, and throat if you actually manage to eat one. But if you're walking through the woods and you see these bright blueberries and these bright red berries, notice how none of the birds, none of the animals are having much of a thing to do with them right now. They're pretty potent and not to be messed with, but you can sure find them. There are lots of them out there, and I hope that you do. That's the Phenology Show for this week. Stay tuned. We'll be back again next week, and we'll talk about all sorts of new things happening.